There is a reform movement in Christian liturgical circles that I don't really understand. The supporters of this movement want to expunge all instances of the word Lord from Christian liturgy, and even the Bible if they can help it. Oh, they mean well, I suppose, believing that we don't have kings or lords anymore, so we cannot possibly understand this language, and it's better just to call God, well, God, and be done with it. And maybe this is true to some extent. We don't live in a feudal society anymore, and we don't understand by and large that the postures we assume on Sunday are similar to those that medieval lieges took to obey their lord. But I think that there is a deeper reason. I think that we understand the significance of the words king and lord quite well. We understand them, but we don't want to acknowledge what they mean. We don't want to admit that there is anyone who can tell us what to do. Just take the television remote control for an example, and the endless angst that it causes in most American households. We each want to be the one to hold the remote, to control. Each one our own king, each one our own lord. My father is a college professor, and when I was younger, I would go with him when he took students on field trips during summer courses. When I was 13 and had been doing this for a few years, we went up to a place called Olm Pishkin. It's an outcropping of sandstone that juts out from the plains at a 45-degree angle for several stories, and there are hiking trails on it. And I knew most of these trails pretty well. And so I took off on my own, making my own way up the Pishkin. I didn't need my father to guide me, along with the wide-eyed flatlanders of his class. Like I said, I was 13. Well, I came around a turn in the trail at one point and almost stepped on a snake. Like I said, the Olm Pishkin is almost all exposed sandstone, and so it makes a great spot for lots of cold-blooded reptiles to make their home where they can sun themselves. Lots of reptiles, including this particular 5-foot-long, 8-inch-round diamondback rattlesnake, along with several of its smaller progeny. Now, I don't like snakes. And I really don't like snakes that are nearly as long as I am tall and have fangs the length of my fingers. I beat a hasty retreat and a few breathless moments later caught up with the very nice college students who were so wisely following the lead of my father and the park ranger. My father, in understated grace, acknowledged my arrival with a raised eyebrow and no further comment. Apparently, the trail I had chosen had been closed off for the summer because a den of rattlesnakes had chosen to make it a home. In my desire to lead myself, I had bulldozed right past the sign telling me this. Since the beginning, humans have not wanted to follow, but to lead. After all, it takes very little cajoling for Adam and Eve to violate God's one rule about paradise. All the servant has to say is, go ahead and eat the fruit, and you'll be grown up, and you can make your own decisions. Just like that, just one little nudge, and whoops, the fruit is off the tree. And from that point, humanity doesn't change too much. After God has rescued the Hebrews from Egypt, are they grateful? Attentive? No, of course not. They act like stubborn, malcontent children. Later, after God has established Israel in the Promised Land, he has to call judges to constantly remind Israel that God is their king. And eventually this isn't even very effective. The Israelites decide that they want their own king, on their own terms, no matter what the consequences. And in some ways this is still the case. We sometimes call today Christ the King Sunday. We want to politely bow and curtsy to Jesus seated upon his throne very far away up in heaven, and go right on our way, doing exactly what we please instead of his gracious will. Daniel's mystical vision describes Jesus as a king, all right, a sovereign over all, over the whole earth. And it's quite clear that no will can oppose this kingship and that all people are to serve him. This vision is of a Lord powerful and mighty beyond our wildest imaginings, a Lord of the most multitudinous resplendence. This is also a Lord who is so dedicated to us that, as Paul says, he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave and being born in human likeness. And being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. The sovereign Lord of Daniel exercises his lordship in being humble and obedient, so insistent is he in having a relationship with humanity, even a humanity who is less than committed to on a relationship with him. Not only is Jesus a transcendent Lord and King, but he is a magnanimous one as well, who cares for his people. And I want to lead myself, why? What benefit is derived from following my own path? A path that is more than likely to lead me directly into a pit of snakes. I suppose it is the alternative. After all, it looks so hard. Jesus tells Peter one morning after the resurrection, "Look here, Pete, this independent streak of yours just isn't going to fly anymore. It's not the way it works in my kingdom. You need to be led. In fact, you are going to be led, led off to the slaughter for my sake. You won't choose it, but it's what you'll have to do. I've done it already, and your time is rapidly approaching. Follow my lead." Or take, for example, Agnes. Agnes was an Albanian woman born in the Ottoman Empire before the First World War. She spent most of her life helping people on the razor's edge of death maintain some last shred of dignity. As a member of a religious order, she took the name Teresa, and she wore the simplest of clothing. She offered her entire life to God and followed the calling she believed she had received from her sovereign Lord. She received worldwide acclaim for her good deeds, yet in her private moments, she said, "When I try to raise my thoughts to heaven, there is such convicting emptiness that those thoughts return like sharp knives and hurt my very soul. How painful is this unknown pain? I have no faith. Repulsed, empty, no faith, no love, no zeal. What do I labor for?" And yet Teresa continued to work until her last days because she felt called, commanded might be a better word, to do this hard work. When asked, Teresa told everyone that she could, that this commandment from her Lord was the unswerving basis for her life. She once said, "It was an order. To do anything else would have been to break the faith." One day, a few months before I left Montana for seminary, I was having a meeting with my bishop. We had finished most of our business and were chatting about my schooling. He asked me if my girlfriend and I were thinking of getting married. I told him that I was going to the jeweler directly after the meeting to pick up my engagement ring for her. And he looked at me and with pastoral firmness said, "You know, now that you're a postulant, that you have to get my permission to get married, don't you?" I just sat there, looking at him, and he just sat there looking at me. It was one of those moments. I knew he was right, but I didn't like it. I didn't want to admit that I had to follow where he led. Then the bishop smiled and said, "You have my permission, of course. Mary Beth is a wonderful young woman." "Thank you," I said. "I appreciate it." Amen.